Hello, hello, beloved listeners, and welcome to another hour of Advanced Living Radio. This is Kenneth Lesser, and I am thrilled and delighted to be your host today. Get ready. Yes, once again, more fun and adventure coming your way. Why? Well, we've made a promise here at Advanced Living Radio. We are going to bring value to your lives every week. And that comes from the answer to a prayer. Heavenly Father, show me the best way to have the most fun inspiring the largest number of people to easily, naturally, joyously experience vibrantly, exquisitely, healthy, wealthy, passionate living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives so we can all get our needs met and celebrate a global loving community that works for everyone. Oh, yes. All right, well, we won't run out of things to do with that goal in mind. And each little piece that we do on that giant goal, that high aspiration, is here to bring you closer to a more wonderful, healthy, balanced, fulfilling life. And yes, a special guest today, and this guest is brought to you by our wonderful sponsor, AdvancedLiving.com, which features the comfort clock. So when you get a moment, go visit AdvancedLiving.com and learn why a comfort clock is like a Clark Kent clock with superpowers, that when it's plugged in, you're going to have a wonderful energy ambience that will lighten your stress load and improve your life. Well, today, oh boy, are we in for a treat. I'm telling you, in these hard times, if there was anything, and it's not hard for everyone, but if you're experiencing some of that, then we can say, well, what are some of the quick things that I could do to help lift myself up? We know somewhere that there's a support for us. Well, what do we have to do? Is it $10,000? Is it knowing the Dalai Lama? What do you need to do? Well, guess what? We have a wonderful guest today, Matthew Walters. And Matthew has set himself on an amazing path. He is not only doing some of the things that will help support people's quality of life, and to do that fairly quickly, he's combined two of my favorite techniques and has studied extensively. So who's this Matthew Walters? Well, get ready. Yes, you might be wondering, is he a certified something? Well, yes. He's certified as a hypnotherapist, as a practitioner of neurolinguistic programming, and therapeutic imagery. We're going to find out about these. And after 15 years in the entertainment industry, he discovered hypnotherapy, yoga, meditation, and all these things transformed his life. And his regular practice of these things gave him clarity to get into alignment with his purpose of being of service and teaching others how to take control of their lives. And he picked a fine school, the He's certified by the Hypnosis Motivation Institute, which is the nation's only accredited school for hypnotherapy. And he graduated with honors and decided, yes, time to give his gift. So he's, ever since graduation, established a private practice in Beverly Hills, is where his office is now. And he's also taught workshops for that institute and for the American Hypnosis Association at many health centers, yoga studios, especially around the Los Angeles area. And, oh, get ready, because we're thinking, well, geez, we have to go to Los Angeles, which for some of us would be a treat. He is the co-founder of the most comprehensive hypnosis download website that's called downloadforchange.com. And that's different than, of course, you know, wheresmychange.com, where we've sometimes been shortchanged on certain deals, right? Okay. Well, his is downloadforchange.com. And he's living a fulfilling life, teaching in and around Los Angeles, and has clients in Beverly Hills and literally all over the country and beyond that, because the phone work that you can do. So, let's have him on. Matthew, welcome.
No, thank you, Kenneth. It's really great to be here.
Well, I am just delighted. As I was reading about some of what you're doing and looking at your website, of course, we made mention of the website,
yep,
downloadsforchange.com, and the other website,
it's Return to Power with the number 2.
Ah, Return, the number 2, Power, returntopower.com.
Yeah.
Okay, and looked and saw your happy little picture there. And,
oh, thank you.
And then this piece here, I couldn't help but tickle myself a little when I thought about this, what is therapeutic imagery? And then, of course, immediately I realized, well, Hugh Hefner was one of the innovators of therapeutic imagery.
Oh, really?
Yes. So many people have been stimulated and some even healed with the Playmate of the Month photo. Or if they weren't fully healed, they were at least distracted long enough to,
exactly,
forget some of their pain. And then, of course, for the women out there, there are magazines now so that we can have all sorts of stimulation. But with that background, I want you to help get me out of that hole I've dug,
sure,
for myself.
So therapeutic imagery, in terms of how I was trained, there's a woman who teaches this at the Hypnosis Motivation Institute. Her name is Cheryl O'Neill. And she developed this whole program based on a lot of the work that was being done at UCLA back in the 80s, initially with using imagery for pain management, and about how, you know, you can use sort of guided imagery to really control and manage a lot of chronic pain over time. And I've sort of expanded that work into this idea that the subconscious mind communicates almost solely through symbol, image, story, and metaphor. And if we communicate with those symbols and metaphors on the level of the image itself, in a sense we sort of engage the creative subconscious mind, we can speak directly with the subconscious and actually get healing without ever really talking about what we're really talking about on a conscious level.
Wow. That is huge, Matthew.
Yeah.
'Cause I don't know about your experience, but if for many years in my own life and so many people that I've interacted with, there is this thought that goes through our minds that says, I've got a problem, I've got a pain, I've got some issue, and I want some help for that.
Sure.
So my pathway, and the logical thing would be, we'd think, okay, I'm going to tell someone, and in many cases, I'm going to tell anyone that will absolutely listen to me until I find that right person, and
right,
I know that by telling them that they will have the answer and my problem will be handled. And as you know, telling and talking about the problem, if that was a great therapeutic tool, most of us would be healed.
Yes, certainly. You know, what we tend to do when we continue to retell those stories is, in a sense, what we're doing is we're reliving the problem every time we tell the story. And we're, in a sense, reinforcing that problem every time we tell that story. So,
So that's why some friends started charging me if I was going to tell them my same story again.
Exactly. Exactly.
first time was free. The next time it was $5, and it went up from there.
you could say that every time you tell the story, you are time traveling, and you're time traveling back to that time when that story initially started. And in a sense, you're going into a form of light trance because you're doing an age regression right there in the moment. And when you do that, you loop back into the problem and oftentimes, you know, find yourself reinforcing it and making it even stronger.
Wow.
I like to talk with people about how do we break the trance, right? How do we get out of the trance of our problem?
Sure. Now, one of the things that I was so intrigued by, you'd mentioned in the therapeutic imagery.
Sure.
I'm just kind of like entranced a bit by that and enchanted by it. The idea you were making mention of creating some of this imagery and communicating with ourselves where mm-hmm. healing can take place without even making any specific mention to a problem.
Right.
And of course, to each of us, in our minds, we were going, oh, yeah, therapeutic imagery. I bet I know what that is. And,
yeah.
and then of course, all of us at once are going to say, well, Matthew, tell us what it is for you so that we can have an example, perhaps, of some therapeutic imagery that we
sure.
can learn a little bit from.
Sure. One of the places we can start is if we talk about our dreams.
Mm.
And how we experience our dreams and what we do with the content of our dreams. Your dreams are a way of your subconscious mind categorizing, venting, releasing, processing all the information of the previous day, emotional information as well as sort of physical sensory information. And now the dream itself you could think of as a nice big metaphor or a nice big sort of story that the subconscious mind creates in order to process this information. As you know, and as everybody's experienced, our dreams have all this content which doesn't seem to make sense. Right? It's
yeah.
like, why suddenly was there a flying cat in my dream, you know? And so what I talk with people about looking at their dreams and understanding them as a way that the subconscious communicates through these stories and these metaphors is to look for certain cues along the way. And one of the big cues I ask my clients when I'm working with them is, at what age were you in the dream? Or what other cues in the dream can tell you about the origins of this problem? So oftentimes, say in the dream, you'll be an adult, but you'll be in your childhood home. Or you'll be an adult, but somebody else who's a significant person in your family will be much younger than they are now.
Mm-hmm.
And that age that shows up in the dream is in a way the age at which this problem that your subconscious is working on, in which that problem began. So one of the mm-hmm. other cues you can look for in your dreams is you can look for anything that doesn't make sense. The flying cat, for example, right?
Yeah.
Or suddenly, you know, you find you're holding a snake, and why am I holding the snake? And so you want to look at what is the emotional experience of that part of the dream which seems to stand out as not making sense. And so when dealing with that, you can look at, okay, what's the emotion that this dream is attempting to process? What's the emotional experience? If you'd like, I have a great example of a client's dream that can sort of, you know, show how this works.
Sure.
So I was working with a client who was raised in an abusive environment. You know, parents who not only physically but verbally and emotionally were abusive. And she had, in a sense, walked away from her family and been away from them for about 20 years and found herself in a new job. And at this new job, she had a boss who was a yeller, right? A boss who was somebody who would just fly off the handle 1 minute and then 10 minutes later would be completely normal and friendly. And so it was sort of throwing her and making her feel at the job very unsafe.
Yeah.
And suddenly, during that week, the first week at that new job, she started having dreams of her abusive father chasing her. And it's like, you know, it was him from her childhood chasing her throughout the dream. And he kept showing up over and over in these dreams. It's like, what are these dreams about? And as we got into looking at the emotion and the experience of what was happening in the dream, what we realized was on the subconscious level, her mind was associating this erratic boss with her abusive father. And that was creating those feelings of anxiety and not being safe in the workplace. And as soon as she consciously realized, oh, wait, this guy's not my father. He's not going to suddenly hit me. He's not going to suddenly attack me. He's just somebody who's a little crazy, you know. And so she was able to let go of all the stress and the anxiety and the fear that was coming over her work and be comfortable and deal with her boss on a much different level. Instead of responding to her boss as that little girl did. And this is something that we all tend to do, is we tend to, in our problem areas in our lives, we respond to the current situation as if we were that child, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And usually we weren't fully resourceful as a child.
Exactly.
And so then it's like, oh my gosh, if people are talk about being stuck emotionally.
Right.
They can be an adult in whatever, eight out of ten contexts in their lives, and then there's one or two where all of a sudden something comes up stressful in those particular contexts, and all of a sudden they're like 4 years old again as a child or something.
Right. If you think about what in hypnosis we call deep trance phenomenon, right? And what deep trance phenomena are things that occur when you're in a deep trance, right? Things that you can either produce or things that just sort of happen naturally. We know that age regression is something we can do when we have somebody in deep trance. We know that we can create a single-pointed focus. We know that we can create negative visual and auditory hallucinations, meaning people can't see things or hear things that are right there. Confusion oftentimes will show up, dissociation. So you think about when you are in that emotional state, in your problem, you have those same qualities. You're going into an age regression, as we just talked about, right? Because suddenly you're that child. You have a negative auditory and visual hallucinations because you really can't see the solution or hear the solutions that are right there in front of you. Oftentimes you feel confused or you get single-pointed focus, meaning you can't think about anything else other than the problem. And it's almost like we get tunnel vision when we're in our problem. So you could say that when we're in our problems that we're actually in a hypnotic trance.
Yeah.
And so what I do with my clients is I teach them how to get out of the trance so that they can be present to who they are now and have access to the resources that they have as an adult in this situation, as opposed to age regressing back to that child who doesn't have the resources and just knows they're angry or they're depressed or they're sad or they're anxious, right?
Yeah, I love some of your philosophy about people actually, even when they're doing something that they may not like,
right.
That they're actually being very successful at creating,
yes.
And it's confirmation that they're good creators. They just may not be good at making the selection about what it is they want to create.
Exactly. You could say they just have some bad software programs running.
Yeah.
You know, there was a 4-year-old who was writing that program, and that 4-year-old just didn't know HTML very well.
Yeah. Yeah, by golly, so and to me, I like. I was just thinking there was years ago, and I don't know if they're still doing it very much.
Mm-hmm.
But at one of the what is it called? Like a world fairs.
Okay.
A movie maker basically had set up a movie, and then towards the end of a movie, at a critical juncture in the movie, or an intense point in the movie,
mm-hmm.
they had filmed 3, 4, 5 different choices that could have been made. And so the audience, at this critical juncture, they paused the movie, and people got to vote and on which direction they wanted the movie to go.
Right.
And depending upon how they voted, so they were, like, still kind of going to be in a trance in a way watching this movie.
Sure.
But they had some selection of choices of which trance to be in.
Right. And you put a point on something that I think is really important to understand, which is that when we have choice in our behavior, when we have choice in our response, then that to me is the source of happiness. Because when we have choice, then we get to choose how we are in this moment. We get to say, you know what, I'm going to choose to be happy. I'm going to choose to feel prosperous. I'm going to choose to feel abundant, whatever it is that we need in that moment. But when we're in that old trance, that old story, we don't have choice. And that's why we feel so much frustration about our behavior.
Yeah. To me, in a kind of a hamburger sort of metaphor, when we're stuck, to me it's like being at the traditional greasy spoon with this big overweight guy with a cigarette in his mouth,
right?
A fry cook, slapping the burgers and fries, and it's just the ultimate greasy spoon. And they're unshaven and unkempt, and they're cooking the food, and it's basically served up to you however the mood that this guy is in.
Right.
There's not any choice there, and to me the other side of that might be what I call the Burger King, where it's like, well, have it your way.
Exactly.
So yes, having more choice is so much better. Now, there's a term in hypnosis and other places about suggestibility.
Yeah.
And I'd love to have you share a bit more about what is suggestibility and how does
sure.
it work.
You know, this comes up a lot when I'm either out networking or I'm meeting a new client, and they say, well, I don't know if I can be hypnotized, right?
Yeah.
And so I usually, that's when we get into this discussion about what suggestibility really is and how it really works. Because suggestibility is really what the state we are in when we are hypnotized, right? We're open to suggestion. And I like to sort of reframe that a little bit and say what we really are is we're open to learning something new. And what I mean by open to learning something new is not just conscious understanding, because we all have a conscious understanding of what we should or shouldn't do. But if we can't take action on that conscious understanding, then we don't really know it. So when we're in that suggestible state, we're open to learning on that level of subconscious or unconscious learning, meaning it just becomes part of who we are. Now, the thing that most people don't understand, though, because some people seem to be more suggestible than others, right?
Yeah.
So what they don't understand is that we're all suggestible in a slightly different way. You could say there's a spectrum, and on one end of the spectrum are these people that are suggestible in a very literal way. What I mean by that is these are the what you see is what you get people, right? The world is as it appears to be. People speak what they mean. And everything is presented in a very straightforward, literal way, and that's the way they experience the world around them, you know?
Yeah.
And then on the other far end of the spectrum are people who are inferential learners. And these are the people who say, well, yeah, I know that's what you said, but it seems like what you really mean is, right? And they're paying attention to a whole different set of information. They're listening to tone of voice. They're looking at the look on your face. They're putting into the context of the situation in which they're in. And they're making certain assumptions about what you're trying to communicate. So they're looking at the meaning behind the meaning. And so we've got sort of these, you know, two ends of the spectrum. Now, all of us are somewhere along this line where, you know, nobody is 100% literal or 100% inferential. We have a little bit of both mixed in. And there's a group of people, about 20% of the population, that are right in the middle, or very close to 50-50. Right, 50% literal and 50% inferential. And these people, we like to refer to as somnambulists. And what a somnambulist is a sleepwalker. Because these people go in and out of trance all the time. Because they're suggestible to both the literal information and the inferential information that they're picking up. So anything can trigger them into that learning state. And these people are the ones that traditionally end up on stage in that stage hypnosis show, right? Because they're just going to go deep as soon as that hypnotist snaps his fingers. And these are also people who ultimately can be very creative because they're able to access that unconscious part of themselves very easily. Now, the ones who tend to believe that they can't be hypnotized are those ones on that far end of the spectrum towards inferential. And the meaning, the reason they think they can't be hypnotized is because they're constantly thinking about everything. They're analyzing it. They're looking for why. They're looking for that conscious sort of understanding, that conscious knowing. And the truth is, we all go in and out of trance all day long. We go in and out of trance when we wake up, when we go to sleep. I like to say that consciousness is on a dimmer switch. You know, it's not an on-off. So we fade, you know, from fully awake down all the way through these levels of consciousness till we get to sleep. And then when we wake up, we go the same way up on the other end of the spectrum. And so what we're looking for in terms of getting somebody into a suggestible state by helping them, you know, learn something new, is we're just trying to get them somewhere down from that wide awake conscious place into those areas in between consciousness and unconsciousness. What happens to the highly inferential person is they sometimes have trouble letting go. They sometimes have trouble sort of giving somebody else control over what's going on in their life. You know, and these are the people who, if there's not a sense of trust, if there's not a sense of rapport with the person they're working with, they won't go into trance. They can stop it very easily, right? And all of us can usually stop trance pretty easily once we're aware of what it feels like. You know, but the question of, can you allow yourself to go into a state of suggestibility so that someone else can, in a sense, assist you and help you, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we're reaching out for
sure.
help.
Sure.
When we based on, I don't know about everyone else, but I think the number of people that I visited with, if they've got an issue, they're doing the best they can to solve it.
Right. Exactly.
And if it isn't handled, then it's like, okay, I did my best. Now I've got to get some help in here.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And it really, it's sort of in both, the ball's in both courts, right? It's in the court of the practitioner as well as in the court of the person who's seeking help. Because it is so much about trust and rapport. It's about creating a feeling of safety, creating a feeling of, you know, this is somebody who I can allow myself to relax with because I think they've got my best intentions at heart. You know, there was a phrase that I learned when I was first studying, which is it just went out of my mind, but it's a complete positive regard, unconditional positive regard, right?
Yeah.
Meaning that I believe that anyone that comes into my office and sits there looking for help, that there's nothing wrong with them, and that everything they're doing is perfect for who they are and where they are in their life. Once you get somebody's story, right, you get, you know, what happened to them and the choices that they made in those instances, then you can go, oh, yeah, that makes sense. I can see why you're having the problem you're having, right? And getting that sense of acceptance and that understanding and that, it's this unconditional positive regard by saying, you know what, you're perfect. There's nothing wrong with you. It's just a question of let's learn a new way of being.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, you learn this other stuff. And,
exactly.
And you're so good at learning, you've got that now, and since you're a good learner, hey, how about some...
And, you know, and I find that most of these techniques that are out there, whether they're more body techniques or more mind techniques, or you know, some of the, even the more spiritual healing techniques, all of them are using some level of trance in order to help assist their clients and help assist people. You know, because trance is such a great way for us to learn. And I think it's such an effective and quick way for us to learn. You know, and that's
yeah.
one of the things to understand about all the practitioners out there of I guess, what you could call sort of holistic or alternative healing. You know, a good massage will put you into trance. You know, a nice yoga class will put you into trance. Acupuncture can put you into trance.
Yeah.
As I like to say, trance happens.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
Uh-huh.
And so we know that, yes, we are definitely susceptible to trance.
Yeah.
Is it a useful trance?
Right.
And, you know, and are we the one helping to direct it and being taught how to direct our trances more.
Exactly.
Wow. Now, you're bringing up some things about stuff to learn as we begin the process of healing and transformation.
Yeah.
And, I mean, what other key things that you think that are involved in this process?
There's a couple things that you mentioned earlier and that I've sort of touched on that certainly I think bear us talking a little bit deeper about. And this is that idea, like I said before, that we are all perfect as we are in the moment, or as you said as well, talking about that we're all 100% successful at running our program. And I think one of the keys in terms of this idea is it's first understanding that at the basic level, all of our behavior, even the addictive behavior, the self-destructive behavior, the sabotaging behavior, all of our behavior at its root has positive intent.
Mm.
Meaning that behavior is there, it's trying to help us. It's trying to help us get more love, more security, help us feel more in control, help us feel more acceptance. And it's almost like, we all have those friends who are very well-meaning and have all that great advice to give us, but it's just not very helpful, right? It's just bad advice. And you could think of those parts of yourself as that friend who has all that bad advice. It's like, you know, I get that you're well-meaning. I get that you care for me and want to help me. However, the advice you're giving me is no good. You know, and so this is what we want to look at when it comes to our own behavior. We want to say, I get that, you know, every time I go into this addictive behavior, or every time I go into this procrastination, or this anxiety or frustration, or whatever, you know, the problems that we have in terms of everyday life, that's like that good friend who really wants to help us. We want to say to ourselves, I get that you're trying to help me. However, the strategy you're using of creating anxiety or creating procrastination is actually giving me the opposite. And so you want to start, because we talked earlier about rapport and trust, right? How does a practitioner create rapport and trust with a client? Well, you want to think in the same way in terms of your conscious and your unconscious mind. How do you create rapport with yourself so that you realize that all parts of you are there to help you and want good things for you? It's just you learn different strategies at different ages. And, you know, as we all say, well, you know, that's what the 4-year-old knew. That's what the 8-year-old knew. They didn't know any better. They didn't have any better resources. But you do now as an adult.
Mm.
So if you get into that place of what I'm really talking about here is that place of acceptance, that place of going, oh, I'm okay. There's nothing wrong. I just have a bad strategy. I have a bad program running. And this strategy and this program really wants to help me. So how can I get into dialogue with it so that I can actually teach it a better way to be?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Initially, as babies, we can't vocalize except through crying
right.
that we want something.
Right.
And then down the road, we learn.